Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good to go. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, back in the rugby dungeon again for, well, one of three episodes that we're making sure. See, we're the only podcast there for you every single Monday morning, 52 weeks of the year, nearly 10 years now. We're also bringing you three, just because while everyone else is putting their feet up and just easing their way back into the week, we're spending our Sunday evening making sure you've got hours of rugby content. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Tim.
And that's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/eggchasers for more content. And if you just appreciate what we do, help keep the lights on, thank you very much. And this one, we're just going to wrap up what's happened.
Wrap up, good luck.
My brain's fried even thinking about it. So this, what has happened since last Sunday? What's the story of the last week?
I don't know. I don't know.
In relation to this ongoing saga?
It's all over the show. So, trying to get it in chronological order is going to be almost impossible. So we'll just talk around it, I guess. So Staffordshire, bless them, the best union in the country as far as I'm concerned, they passed a motion to send their councillor back with his tail between his legs. And his motion was not only... His orders, which he had to accept, were not only to try and rescind it, but he had to phone up and try and convince all of the fellow council members to also rescind it. So there's a technicality, which means that Staffordshire, to get their motion to be voted on in the next council meeting, have to get it sort of supported by a certain number of other council members by 1st of February, and they're not going to do that. So that's not going to be a motion that gets passed or gets heard. But there's plenty more to run. A huge, huge shout out to Rob Sigley, who started up the Community Clubs Union, CCU. Everyone should be involved with that. He is so busy. It is incredible. You know, I talk to him most days, and just the volume of emails and support that he's getting from local clubs
is just to be clear,
absolutely astounding.
So he's a former championship player,
yep.
National One player with Moseley.
Moseley, he's currently at Bourneville now.
Yes, currently at Bourneville. And so a prop, if I remember rightly.
Yes, that's correct.
And he's I'd say along with, I put you on one of these, and us generally as a podcast, he was one of the quickest to act on this and set up a counter union to represent the interests of community rugby players.
Yeah, it really gets it. He has worked so hard to try and get these.
And am I right in saying he's got nearly 200 clubs signed up to push for a special general meeting at the RFU?
Yeah, it's the situation with the clubs is sort of like your bank account, Tim. Every time you look at it, it gets larger, the numbers. The number just gets bigger and bigger. So people ask me, like, how many are signed up to the CCU? And I'm like, I don't know. Yesterday, it was like 250 or something who pledged support. And that number just grows and grows and grows and grows. And the amount of support which has come from the grassroots clubs towards Rob and the CCU is just, it's incredible. So my week this week has been very much tale of two halves. By about Tuesday, I was like, there's no way we cannot win this. And not only did I think there's no way that we could not win this, I thought, it's awesome, because I think I mentioned it last week, but I'm talking to so many people in rugby who I wouldn't otherwise talk to, directors of rugby, head coaches. Just the sheer volume of good people. And you start talking about, I don't know, this awful tackle law. And then it moves on to actual rugby and how you're doing in the league and, you know, all that sort of stuff. We've got loads of good people. Weird that the RFU never mentioned that in their promotional material or, you know, when they're trying to promote the game. But in some respects, I've never been more enthusiastic about the state of the English game. But on the other hand, it comes to, say, Wednesday, and then you have World Rugby sticking their oar in.
Right, yeah, so I'm trying to sort of summarise what's been going on. So the backlash continued early in the week. Mm. And initially, the response from... when people were emailing us, this is a response I've had from my counsellor. The response was belligerent, basically. Belligerent's the word I'd use. And it was, yeah, we might not have communicated well, but... no acceptance that they made anything other than the correct decision. By the end of the week, the backlash has continued and has been so fierce that the climb down, which we predicted would happen, has begun. And
it's not quite a climb down, though, is it?
Not quite a climb down. I was going to say, what do you make of the RFU apology?
It's awful.
And I'm using little quotation marks as I say apology.
I have communicated with Bill Sweeney about 3 times this week, just in disbelief of the RFU's reaction to this. It's on par with those celebrity non-apologies. I'm sorry for how it made you feel, but it's kind of worse. So they're trying to make this into a communications issue, and it is not a communications issue. It is the fact that you've run roughshod over... By the way, do you know it's roughshod, not roughshod?
Yes.
I did not know that. Mm. Yeah, all my life I've been saying that wrong.
Roughshod.
What does roughshod mean? Does anyone know?
No idea.
Do you know?
No.
I don't know either. Just roughshod, it's just a thing to say. But they've done that over the wishes of the community game.
So the council are trying to point at the board and say it was a communication error from them. The board are sort of pointing at the council, they made the call.
Hang on. The council are flat out saying that the RFU lied. Now, this is untenable. So no matter which way this goes now, I think Bill Sweeney's position is untenable. You know, so the council are saying, well, waste wasn't in there. We thought it was... this wasn't clarified? Bill Sweeney wasn't even on the call for one of the most significant moments.
He was at an event in Downing Street or the Houses of Parliament or something.
Or was he?
Really?
Yeah.
Does not surprise me one bit.
So, and I just want to give a little shout. So when I was coming through as a junior... at Newbury Rugby Club and just coming through the Colts and into the first team, Terry Burwell was our director of rugby.
Was he?
And he was a really good guy.
You never told me this.
Why would I?
Because Terry Burwell's quite cool on Twitter and has loads of good information. I thought this would have come up earlier.
No. So Terry Burwell was the DOR at Newbury when we were going up through the leagues, league after league, and I was coming... Anyway, so I know Terry well. And he was the councillor, it turned out. He represents Hampshire. And he was the councillor who said to the council, shouldn't we wait until after some consultation before we vote? Shouldn't we wait? And the council said, no. In other words, we know best. We don't need to ask anyone. And that's the bit that's, I think, come to light here. Like the RFU and Bill Sweeney and all the rest of it, that will get dealt with. And I agree, there's been big errors there. But the council are not immune from massive criticism here.
Do you know, one of the things which I've thought of, and it's one of those boring technical things, but... a lot of councilmen are also their union president. So the Lancashire Union, I'm not sure this is correct, actually, but I think the president is also a councilman. Now, that makes it very hard for your union to hold your councilman to account when you're saying, well, we don't agree with this, because you've got to go through your local unions. Well, you can't do it because they've got an awful lot of power. Staffordshire, their councilman was not their president, and their president was like, no, you're going to go back, and if you don't, we will replace you. So I think it's actually, that should be an amendment for how rugby is governed, which is, appoint your councilman. I also don't think the council is a bad way of doing things, to be fair. I don't think it's the worst way at all. But I don't think the councilman can also be the president of a local association, union, whatever you want to call it.
Just going back to the apology and stuff, what do you make of it all, Phil?
So there was the two big RFU statements this week. The first one that you referred to before, which I think that poured petrol on the flames of what was going on. For Toure, I've got the statement in front of me. And there was two things that kind of half made me laugh and half made me cry from that. The first was the line, "We consider the decision to reduce the tackle height to be the start of the process." So the outcome is the start of the process. And that followed on by the one that would definitely, JB, I know
that's
enrage
like
you.
Going, I've decided we're having a divorce, so now we need to start a discussion about this relationship.
Yeah.
Tim, can we have a fight? And then we'll discuss why we're having the fight in the first place.
And the other one, which is the bit that it's just... The statement is, "We will publish further information, including videos, FAQs, in the coming days. This will be led by multi-format training offer, including face-to-face, blah, blah, blah." Which is basically what... It's a statement that other people on the RFU side in this made, which was, if you just educate yourself, you will understand where we're coming from.
I mean, this is
That is infuriating.
Isn't it?
It's so maddening, that kind of approach. If only you were more educated about these highbrow matters, then JB, you would understand it.
The arrogance is incredible. It is incredible that Yorkshire, their union, issued something, and it's had the line that, like, there will, of course, need to be a re-education process. Yeah. I'm like, do you know what? I'm going to start up camps. I'm going to start up these like little camps where we can send all a few counsellors to get re-educated. It's Orwellian. The language is actually Orwellian. But the problem with this debate is it seems to include everybody except for the people that it involves. And I'll have a little whinge later about a broadcaster who did this.
Do it now.
So I'll give you an example. And I will be fair on this, because when you actually watch the broadcast, it is fair. You know, I think that BT put both sides of the argument forward fairly well, actually. Mm-hmm. But how hard is it just to get hold of someone from a level 7, level 6 club and have them explain to everybody what the damage of this will be? Because it's going to be absolutely enormous. Absolutely enormous. I was out last night with Didsbury after yet another win, top of the table now.
Who'd you play this week?
I'll tell you more about this later, but we beat Lee.
Good work. Were Lee one of the teams that beat you earlier in the season?
They beat us 24-0 on bottom of the table.
Oof.
And they've only won two games all season.
Oof.
Yeah, it was a bad day in the office, that.
Yeah.
So we beat Lee, and then we all went out for drinks. Now, at the moment, the rugby club is absolutely wild, because we're acting like it's the last days of Rome. You know, the chat is, right, you've got to be available next week. Why? Well, seven more games left.
Yeah, you never get to do it again.
Like that, this is it. Some of the shots going in yesterday were absolutely titanic from both sides. Because I guess we were all thinking, well, let's just go and get some now.
I'm not going to be able to hit anyone in the head in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, and weirdly, one of the more physical games that we've had in a long time, not a single high tackle penalty from either side.
Fair play.
Because it just does. It's just not really a problem in our level. Anyway, so BT Sport did their thing. And I was just amazed they had Ross Tucker on. Mm-hmm. No problem with that. Ross Tucker needs to explain the science. Wayne Barnes on. Yeah, fine. Why not? Nick Easter on. Where was the representative from Community Rugby? Mm. Who was the person who's going to sit there on the panel and say, yeah, we're going to lose 30 guys? Because that's what the lads from Talk H were saying last night. Like, we're going to lose our whole first team, including me.
What did you think of the broadcast?
It was fair. It was fair. But it didn't... Two things I would say. It argued about the technicalities, and we have to stop this, because, you know, I'm not against it because we can't officiate them all. I'm not against it because, you know, it might be tricky to do X, Y, Z. I'm against it out of the principle. And that's what we should be talking about. It's the principle, right?
Some people are against it. On the technicalities.
Yeah, but then it's just a technical argument, isn't it? It's like, you know, you ask a girl to go on a date and she says no. She means no, actually. But she messes up. She goes, no, I can't get a lift. Well, she's made that into a technical argument then. She just needs to say no. So, like, we don't want to be going down the route of saying, how do you do a maul? Because you're saying, well, if you sort out the maul, I'm all for this. Then you've got to backtrack in and say, okay, well, what about this? And then what about this? The answer is no, we don't want it. Why don't we want it? Because it's going to absolutely destroy our game at community level. Destroy it.
My, my response to that would be I thought the broadcast on Rugby Tonight at BT Sport was actually a good one, and they put forward the point of view that the majority of rugby players at the elite and community game share. I'd also say I agree with you, for what it's worth, on the vast majority of this particular topic. And so, you know, just to fire back your way in terms of content and how it's delivered, going on Twitter in the way you did does not help the cause.
Well, look.
No.
It is so a deeply personal subject. Right?
Yeah,
it's a deeply personal subject. And what we have across the board are people talking down to us. So Wayne Barnes is not going to referee a community game. Nick East has been in charge of Chinner for three games, four games, didn't show up, so on yesterday.
But
right?
Chinner were in what league?
League three, so it would affect him.
So just because he doesn't...
No. But that, so
you have to be involved in a community club, turn up on a Saturday to
No. Their idea of an amateur is a guy who's not an amateur, right?
No.
So that doesn't count?
So if you'd gone on Twitter and asked the question... Can I ask why?
Wait.
Can I ask why there was no community person and you had Wayne Barnes, you had Nick Easter, and you had Ross Tucker? Can I ask why? If you just asked the question rather than go on going, you're a clown, this is pathetic.
It is pathetic.
No, wait.
It is clown-like behaviour.
What you might have got was you might have been a good faith question which got a good faith response. And I can tell you the answer. There have been podcasts that have had community representatives on who have an hour or 90 minutes to talk about it. When you have 30 minutes of TV, which once you take the adverts out is like 22 minutes, and when you go, we've got 22 minutes, we want to get a demonstration in to try and talk about some of these things which people have concerns and questions about. We want to get the expert on to try and give us some rationale, but we'll hold his feet to the fire a little bit. And we want to get some perspectives on some rugby experts who, when you do all that, the 22 minutes is gone.
Yeah.
And that's...
You're absolutely right, Tim.
And that is why.
You're absolutely right. And this infuriates me even more. Because 22 minutes... Of the 22 minutes, the one section that you've not discussed are the 150,000 people who play this game week in, week out, who didn't get a say.
Well, that was...
Right? So you've literally just put the priorities in. You do this, and this. Was the voice?
Did they not talk about the way that it was done?
Get someone to talk about who is going to actually put the case forward, who knows what they're talking about, from a club who's going to be affected.
All I'm saying on this is, and yes, you may argue I'm biased because these are my colleagues, but so for two reasons. One, you don't win anyone over... You don't change any minds and win anyone over when your starting point is you're a clown and you're pathetic. And
it's clown-like behaviour. It would be so easy to pick up the phone and find someone. Why is that hard? You've got the biggest rugby show, right, of the week going out.
But I've just told you what might be a reason, which is
what they didn't prioritise us. Fine.
Well, but as you said, there's all sorts of content out there that the points were.
Ross Tucker's work has been put out by World Rugby, by every councilman, by the RFU, on Twitter. In the press, you can't move for Ross Tucker's arguments, and rightly so. BT Sport had 40 minutes to talk to the majority of rugby fans who would be engaged. They decided not to put forward a voice from the community game. I think that's unacceptable.
Okay. You can think that's unacceptable, but... I made my point. I think it's unacceptable to... say that was utterly pathetic and they were clowns. Because I thought it was quite a balanced programme. And there's people like us that are here to... Well, this is
Yeah,
like,
but we don't, we're not talking to however many people are watching the rugby on BT Sport.
Probably the same. It's probably similar numbers.
Yeah. But look, it would have made one hell of a difference, right, to have somebody from a club. So one of the interesting things was Nick Easter said he's going to lose two players. And I think he's probably right, okay? He's trying to re-sign players for fairly good money. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not making a judgment on what Chinna do and their business. But those players are not only just turning down rugby, but they're turning down good money at Chinna. When you take away the money and you look at the damage that this will do to clubs with no money, it is going to be absolutely enormous. You're going to see teams fold. So it's not much to ask, is it?
I agree with you.
The primary broadcaster, just to get out of their bubble slightly and reach out to people who are not in their phone book, who are not the pros, who are not the directors of rugby, who's not an ex professional coach. Stella is a professional coach. JB, it would have taken 2 minutes.
You might even have a point. But
I might have a point. I do have a point.
No. My point is, you may even have a point. Ask the question and then get a genuine answer, because it might well be, once we'd looked at the show and realised this is how many minutes we've got, and
you weren't the priority. That's what they'd say, isn't it?
Or the response you might have got if you'd engaged in a different way was, yeah, you're probably right. We should have done that. We should do it again in future, or we should do it in future.
It's too late. We've got 7 games left. You know, so they should have done their research before.
On the 7 games,
I'd say you're catastrophizing a little bit, because you're convinced it's not going to happen.
I was, and now I'm not.
Yeah, on the 7 games left, so we spoke before about the first RFU pouring petrol, the statement earlier in the week, and then they made one on Friday, I think it was, which was...
Equally as clownish. Am I allowed to call them clownish?
Well, what's the point in calling them clownish?
Because it is clown-like. It's absolutely clown-like.
You don't help yourself when you do that.
I don't know. You need to point things out.
Make your argument on the merits. I mean,
if you point out that someone is a clown and they shouldn't be doing something because they are a clown, that is a good reason.
The view I generally take on Twitter and stuff is when someone calls...
All right, they're incompetent.
No, when someone calls me a pejorative, I go, well, you've lost the argument because you can't win.
Let's remove the word
merits.
Clown. Or use clown as a proxy for incompetent. They're incompetent.
So... The second statement from the RFU, it seemed to be rowing back a bit. It was an apology initially, and then it was they want to work with the community in order to try and understand what the game could look like. Now, that could be... The response might be from the community, we want the game to look exactly like it currently looks. Full stop, end of, and they row back fully. Or it could be somewhere in between what they put on the table and what has been done historically. But at least, it kind of, to me, when I read that, I thought, yeah, they've at least, instead of just saying, oh, you guys need to educate yourselves and then you'll understand our way of thinking, they are at least trying to understand other people's perspectives. So we'll see where that goes.
It's going nowhere, I don't think.
I predicted last Sunday, and I'm absolutely certain this is how it's going to pan out. I said they'll start backtracking this week. My prediction last week, they'll start backtracking, it'll move up, and it'll become the chest in exactly the same way as junior rugby players already. Like the under-15 team, high is anything above the chest. Anything light above the nipple line is regarded as high. And what I don't understand is why... Well, here would be the way to do it. You could look at it and go, yeah, we really want to lower the tackle height. I tell you what we have got, though. We've got a load of people up to the age of about 18, all junior rugby currently, have only ever tackled with nipple being the highest they're allowed to tackle and everything else is high. Mm. Maybe we wait until they come into the first team and see if just naturally muscle memory and all their coming up through the age groups. Maybe we'll watch this one for the next 5 years and we'll track if that has any difference. Because my guess is if they did nothing, it will go down to nipple height anyway.
The question is to what end, right? To what end do we want to do this? Because we're not trying to not necessarily stop concussions. We're trying to stop dementia and like horrific outcomes which are happening in the process.
We better stop drinking alcohol.
Well, let's not go down that route. Yeah. But yeah, I completely agree with your sentiment.
We need to fully understand the causality.
Yeah.
And not just the correlation.
So we reduce it. So this change will reduce head contacts from like, what's the stat? Like 19.7, 16.2.
Per
league.
This was on the French data. Yeah. In a 14 team league, it basically takes it from 19.5 to 16 a season, which when you distribute that across the 14 teams basically means half a concussion per team per season fewer.
So if they're willing to do, if you're working on the principle of like risk reduction, and this is another thing which BT Sport said, this isn't a knock on BT Sport, I think it's just a general comment on the state of the debate, which is people will say, well, it's safety first and foremost, or you know, we always need to be reducing the risks. I don't think that's a good principle for managing a contact sport, because if it's going from what I said before, 19.7 to 16.2, that's not enough to justify what you're doing.
That would just lead to more.
Yeah.
Because no one would say 19 per season is unacceptable, but 16 is acceptable. No one would say that, like, if 19 is not acceptable, reducing it by three is acceptable. So it would be, what's the next thing? What's the next thing?
Yes.
It goes back to, we're talking in the kitchen, it goes back to the old Russ Roberts risk statement, which it might be Nassim Nicholas Taleb statement, that if you're a construction company and you don't want to kill anyone, don't build anything.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in a contact sport and you don't want any injuries, or specific injuries, head injuries, don't be in a contact sport.
Yeah. I just don't think we even want that situation. We need safer. Do we? Why? I mean, the fact that it's dangerous means it means something to be a rugby player. Otherwise, it means nothing. Anyone can do it.
Everyone does. Like, this is a point you've made specifically, JB, but like, we all understand this point, that everyone goes in having a good idea of the risks.
Yeah.
Now, all the years that I've played, you couldn't. If someone had asked me how many concussions do you think you are likely to sustain if you play for 10 years, or your team is likely to sustain in a season, I could have guessed at a number, but I wouldn't have known. But I would have known that the risk is, I had good enough handle on the acceptability of the risk to me as an individual, because I'd seen it.
Yeah.
I'd seen it many, many times. And I don't know, there's something in it where the mechanism of injury that we're talking about is already illegal in the sport. You've got individuals who've signed up knowing that the mechanism of injury is illegal, having a good handle of what the incidence rate of that injury is. What more can they, these are adults. They're going into something totally voluntarily.
I think the kids have got it right with their level of tackling, because they're kids, and you know, when you go to adults, it is slightly different. We know the risks. It hasn't changed for 100 years.
And there is you've made this point as well. There is difference. If you're being forced to play something at school,
yeah,
that is different to being an adult walking into your local rugby club.
And it's certainly different for the pros. And I think that's a really important statement. It is so much different for the pros. So like, people like Ross Tucker should be commended, because we need to know the risk for the pros. It's ever-changing. Mm. So the way I look at this, it's like tax policy, okay? And this is a really dull way to look at it, but it is like tax policy. So if you change the tax code in some way, you might find yourself with a loophole which someone will exploit. I'll give you an example of one. They did something so disabled people could buy cars free of VAT. Mm-hmm. And then some disabled Olympians bought a load of Range Rovers with adaptations, took all the adaptations off, and then sold them
for profit.
Exactly, right? So that there is a classic loophole. You would expect the HMRC to crack down on that. You'd expect them to prosecute that. You'd expect them to change how the laws are written, add a few bits and pieces. That's what you would expect them to do, because that's good governance. What you would not expect the HMRC to do on one day is just change the rate of tax which you pay. You would not expect them to change the source of income or redefine it. Anything which is fundamental to the change of the game, or indeed the taxation code, has to go directly to the stakeholders, or to the parliament, or to the voters. We can see this with World Rugby. So the caterpillar ruck, that is basically a result of a loophole. The scorpion ruck, that is the result of a loophole.
The scorpion ruck was the Saracens one that we were trying to loop round.
That's the one. There's another one which I can think of.
Well,
the foxholes. I mean, there's loads of examples.
That loophole got closed. So that loophole existed for years and years.
The croc roll.
Yeah, the croc roll just went, because we changed the laws and then we started croc rolling. Oh, Christ, that's dangerous. Let's not do that.
Yeah, a croc roll does still happen occasionally.
But to change the fabric of the game for no reason at all at the amateur level is exactly the same as, like, you know, the tax man just one day saying, oh, yeah, it's 21% now, or it's 30% now. It's a completely different thing.
So just here's an interesting hypothetical. Imagine we'd heard nothing for the last 2 weeks, and then today there was a statement made saying our intention is to lower the tackle height to the nipple, which is what they do in MLR, which is what they do in junior rugby. Can you imagine? It's hard to put yourself in that hypothetical, but this is part of why I think it was just the most monumental. This will be used as a case study in like PR firms. Yeah. This is how you don't
not
do it.
To do it.
This is how you don't do it. Because I actually think that would have been there would have been the natural element of, I don't like change, why are they doing this, or why haven't we been asked, or whatever. But I think the reaction wouldn't have been nearly as negative.
Well, I think what you would do, because nobody trusts the RFU now, And I don't trust my local union, or indeed my councillors, as it happens. I mean, I'll wait to see what happens.
Are you going to the meeting on the 8th?
Am I going to the meeting on the 8th? Lol. So I'm not sure I trust them anymore, to be honest, because they were so easily... I don't know, were they stupid or were they naive?
Hubristic a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, there does seem to be... there does seem to be a sort of inversion of roles here. Everyone seems to have forgotten who owns who. So World Rugby does not own the RFU, and the RFU does not own its members. The members own the RFU, and the RFU owns World Rugby. You wouldn't have thought that that's the way it goes, but that is actually how it does go.
The element that the RFU have independent of its members is the commercial side and the corporate side of things, and that's basically what is sort of by agreement the members of the clubs have the councillors to represent them to make decisions on game-based stuff.
Yeah.
When it comes to the governance that the RFU have over and above that, it's all the financials and all the corporate side of things.
So my thought on this is these are laws made by simple minds. And I know that's a very harsh thing to say, but when you look at what World Rugby did to sort of look at the high tackle law, they just got a bunch of so-called experts or big names into a room and Ross Tucker, and they said, look, solve the high tackle issue. But I think they went about it in a very direct way. So there will be other ways to solve this, which people won't necessarily think are... Well, hang on. It's not necessarily the high tackle issue, it's the concussion issue. I think that you've got to separate those things out. Because I don't believe that most of these concussions are coming from high tackles. So solve the concussion issue was the task. So I think there'll be ways to do this without ruining the game and changing the tackle heights. Just to answer your first question, what would I say about nipple high?
Yeah.
I would need to see it. So I think it would be fair if they came back to the community game and said, look, we're thinking of doing this. Why don't we trial these rules in your cup competition? So you can all see it. You can all have a feel. No one really cares about the cup much anyway.
Or even better, if you've got some buy-in from some clubs, you go, right, in the ADMs this season, you carry on, but in the Northwest West and East and North, we're going to do nipple height. Let's have a look for the next two seasons, see how it goes.
Yeah, that's if they've done that, and if they've said we think nipple height is best, but let's have some engagement. Let's say, where do you think best? Because if everyone turned around and said, oh, waist and below is best, then they could go with that. That's not what they're going to do. But
no. So, like,
just the way that they did it was so bad. So, like, they could have so much better.
Exactly.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Because we might play nipple hanging, though this is unplayable. Can't do this.
Yeah. Yeah, or you might say, but this is not really any different. Like, I'm never aiming to tackle anyone above that line anyway. Therefore, for me as an individual, it doesn't change anything.
Yeah, because if you slip up from nipple to slightly above nipple, you're not getting penalised, so it's going to be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got two French lads at Toc H, and they both say that the level 7 trials are a disaster.
The French ones.
Nobody likes them, and, you know, it is what it is. So... that's how I would trial it, because nobody trusts the RFU. They are completely shot of all credibility.
They've burned any credibility they had has just gone.
And
in the
to
last
be fair,
8 days,
the councils have shown themselves for the most part. I mean, they're good rugby people, and this is why it really surprised me that they passed this. Actually, because everyone talks about like the Blazer Brigade and how they're stuck in the past. Well, you'd have thought that these guys would be the last guys to sort of, you know, wave something through, but they did, which really shocks me. But I don't trust them much either, because if they're peddling the same nonsense that, you know, the science is peer-reviewed and therefore you can't argue, well, they've got to go, they've got to leave. And one of the things that they said, or my counsel said in his reply to me, was that the council have, on many occasions, highlighted they are concerned about the image of the game because of high tackles. Now, if you're on the council and you can't stand in the public square and win the debate as to why rugby is important to its members as it is, you shouldn't be on the council. Mm. It's simple as that. That might be a good test, electing the next councillor. Can you put forward a really good argument for why rugby is as it is now and is important? If they can't answer that, they can't be elected. That would be one of my criteria. So to solve this a different way, I reckon it would be probably solved better something like the 50-22 kicking rule. Because indirectly, you're dropping numbers, you've got less double contacts. Less double contacts means less subconcussive hits. And I'm guaranteeing you the future is not going to be the knockouts, it's going to be subconcussive hits in the pros. So they've looked at it one way. It's a multifactorial equation.
Well, they just limit the trading in the week, don't they?
Oh, sorry. Such a good point. Yeah. That's such a good point. One of the things that makes me think they're not necessarily that serious about what they're trying to do. It's the fact that no one said, yeah, no more than 12 games a season for a pro.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, well, be it 12, but at the moment it's, is it 30 and 35?
Yeah, that's something like that. I mean, we've been saying this years now.
We've been saying it for years. Actually, partly from a welfare point of view, but also partly because you want the best players on the pitch all the time. Nobody wants to see Munster Leinster when all the Irish internationals are not playing. What's the point in that?
I think if you're a professional, you have a minimum wage and you have a maximum games. Yep. And those include international games.
Yeah.
And if they say that they're serious about limiting the really hard edge of the concussion debate, which is in the pros, that's what they'd announce first. They want to somehow have a situation where nobody gets concussed and yet we play all of the rugby in the world, and can't do it.
And a big thing, and it's a point I agree with on principle, but it's going to cause additional problems, is, and we've spoke about it before, increasing ball in playtime. If you increase ball in playtime and you increase the number of games, and everyone's fitter and stronger and faster, like this is just getting worse and worse and worse.
Isn't it?
I am very much for, I love rugby, I'm very much for a reduced season.
Yeah,
I've been this way for quite a long time. And in look at the NFL, 16 games in a
18 now, but
18. But scarcity creates demand.
Correct. But like the trials could have been so much more creative, couldn't they? So one of the things I've thought about this week is...
It wasn't a trial. This isn't a trial. Yeah. We need to stop talking about this as a trial.
The French trial.
Oh, the French trial, right.
So it could have been so much more creative. They could have said things like, the maximum height is where it is currently, or the lower of where it is currently, or you can't exceed the height of the ball. So the ball dictates where the high tackle is. That would be a really interesting... But yeah, I'm not saying it's right. It's not, but it'd be a far more interesting trial than
I'd just pick players with really long, like ape-like arms, and get them to run with like massive Fijians.
Can you imagine
holding the ball in one hand down by their knees?
Can you imagine your ball security issues down there though?
Yeah,
someone just kicks it.
True. Or on that one as well. The old hospital pass above someone's head where they reach up for it. It's just all fair game.
Head's fair game.
Not today.
It's bad. It's dangerous enough anyway, exposing your ribs with your hands above your head.
How about a couple of emails on this? Glenn.
Fire away.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Glenn is from Chelmsford RFC and Bishop Stortford RFC. And it's a very brilliantly put long email, Glenn. I'm just going to pick out one little bit. Here it says, there we go, which I think you'll agree with, and we've said similar before, but this is an opinion which I'm hearing a lot. The problem is that whereas most sports... Put simply, the leadership in the sport seem obsessed with appeasing those individuals and organisations whose fundamental aim is to remove all danger from sport in general and rugby union in particular. Mm. The only problem is that whereas most sports largely ignore or carefully manage the wailing and hand-wringing coming from these people, think rugby league, boxing, MMA, cycling, motorsports of various types, rugby union brings them to the heart of the game and lets them set and manage the agenda. And they do this with the almost certain knowledge, unless they're really dumb, that these people will never be satisfied. This is there is a concern about falling player or membership numbers, yet almost everything you see, hear and read about the sport has to include the obligatory discussion about head injury or player welfare, which, in my honest opinion, only serves to produce the completely opposite effect of that intended.
Yep, completely right. Completely right.
So at the very least, and what pains me, and quite a few other people on email have made this point, it's like, oh, We're gonna watch the Six Nations, the one time in the year when millions of people tune in and watch an occasional game of rugby, and this is going to be on the agenda.
Do you know, I'm dreading Six Nations. I really am, because this sounds really stupid, but how do I get behind a team like England, knowing that they're going to benefit the RFU?
What you do is, you know, the players are are in agreement with you. Did you Ben Youngs? Did you see what he had to say?
I did.
Which was, and this is what I think, and I think the BT Sport program did the same. I think the general word you're getting is, we can look at anything, we can look and be open-minded to all possibilities, but you're not changing rugby. You're not going to change the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Did you see, false information, did you see the RFU tackle lines and danger zones and whatnot?
Yeah.
Oh, and have you seen the demonstration of the new tackle technique? You see that video?
With the head in the same space.
Oh, head in the same airspace. So there you go. There's a nice hard hip. Stick your head there.
Incredible scenes. Absolutely incredible scenes. So let's go with the data sheet first. So I've got multiple lines going across a player's body.
Because I wanted to mention this. Phil, you
did mention this before with the red zone, the amber zone, and the green zone.
Yeah.
Tell me.
Well, so there was from the data that Ross Tucker said, it gave three areas. So, say, and I can't remember precisely, but above the, let's say above the shoulder, that's the red zone, because highly likely to get head on shoulder, head on head, nasty things. Below the waist, now, I can't remember how it was phrased in Ross Tucker's, but everyone's taking below the waist to mean below the hips. So let's just go with that for a second. Yeah. So hips and below, you've got some soft stuff, thighs, bum, but you've also got some hard stuff, hips, knees, shins. That was the amber zone, not as bad as the red zone, but better than... not as bad as the red zone, but not as good as the middle zone, the green zone, which is basically your stomach. So below the sternum, but above the hips. Now, one of the things that I've seen, I think Brian Moore was one of the people who I saw...
Genius, that is.
...saying...
One of the few people in favour of all this.
Yeah, but he was saying... So based on that Ross Tucker evidence, those are the three bands. So you got your traffic light system. He was then saying, oh, well, the waist should be defined as 2 inches above the navel. Which, if you do that, so if the red zone is like the sternum and above, and the green zone is 2 inches above the navel...
Post yourself through that letterbox.
Orange zone, the amber zone, is 2 inches below the navel. You've got this band of about... Like, on my body, that is maybe 2 inches of height that you could... You've got it as the green zone to hit.
I'm not that accurate.
That is not what they were intending the law to be when it was written on that basis.
Well, there's also a problem that they then break down the amount of contacts in a game... in these different zones. Mm. So the problem you've got with this is, I mean, this is genuine now. I cannot think of a single reason to touch in a game of rugby between an opposition man's waist and, say, that green zone, or indeed the amber zone. I cannot think of a single reason to touch them in open play other than an attempted tackle or a tackle. Can you? Maybe a shove off the ball?
In a mall.
Yeah, but in open play.
Oh, no, yeah, an open play.
No. Like, is it a show?
It's going to be a tackle.
Rucking someone off a ball.
Yeah, maybe.
If you've not got the ball, it could be like a bit of a shoulder to shoulder, but even then it's shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, so you look at that and you think, okay, so that's where the tackles go. Okay, cool, yeah. Because nothing else is happening there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then you look at the head, and there's, 11, they said 10 a game? So 10 high shots a game. But the problem with the head stuff is most of the head contacts... or like incidental, or things that start off legal and then rise, or seatbelt challenges, or things which just, frankly, aren't dangerous. I mean, look, they're more dangerous than not doing it, but they're not dangerous. So if you're just like the average civilian, or you haven't thought it's through, you're like, bloody hell, that's 10 high shots every game. Mm. Well, it's not 10 high shots every game. And I'll tell you why I know this. It's because every time there is a high shot, everyone starts fighting. You know, that's just, a card comes out. If you had 10 high shots a game, I would know.
You would know about it.
We would all know. We would never stop talking about it. Like, you know, we finished the game with, 10 on 10. Like, it just isn't, isn't a thing.
A lot of those head contacts will be pick and goes.
Yeah,
They are illegal according to the law, because you end up having head on head. But it's refereed in a manner that it's kind of let the boys play, because it's not low force, but it's low risk, because both parties are in the first like two steps of moving, and so it's less risky. Therefore, it's not refereed in that manner.
And in the new laws, you can do an upright soak tackle,
mm-hmm.
which who knows what that is, but fine.
Well, the upright soak tackle, certainly defending the pick and go on the try line,
very effective.
Now is very, very effective because it leads to a goal line dropout. It's actually, I would argue, that is more effective than a chop tackle or a head, like anything else.
Yeah.
When you're on the goal line.
I miss it when the laws that we got angry about were like goal line dropouts.
I'm still pretty angry about that.
Yeah, I still don't like it.
No, but I'm still furious.
I kind of miss that. That's what I used to be frustrated by in terms of the laws.
I used to miss the days when we were frustrated about, you know, kit's been the wrong colour.
Yeah.
Those are the days,
yeah,
weren't they?
When Ireland played South Africa, and that just the disgrace of that Ireland home kit against South Africa in the autumn, that's the sort of stuff that used to get me outraged.
When Scotland played New Zealand in Murrayfield and they're both wearing slightly different shades of grey blue.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. So here's one of those things which I found out this week. Nothing to do with head contact, but I only would have found out because I'm talking to lots of people. So, what do you know about Halifax?
Brian Moore.
God, yeah.
Rugby league.
Rugby league, yeah.
Great blue and white hoop kit.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I've played at Halifax a couple of times.
So,
good club.
George
good
Ford?
Ground.
Yep. Kind of. No. Yeah, basically. Yeah. Oh, well
did Mike
no, he was there, he was Rishworthians, wasn't he?
Well, Rishworth is basically Halifax, isn't it? Rishworth's down the road. Oh, and no, because he'd be Oldham, sort of Saddleworth.
Yeah.
Of course.
Anyway, tell me about Halifax.
Charlie Hodgson, of course, is Halifax.
Ah, tell me about Halifax.
Was he not somewhere else?
Durham University he went to, but he grew up in Halifax.
I thought he played for a different club, though, in the M62 corridor. Let me look that up, but you could go on.
So, I'm going to say his name wrong now, so sorry about this, but Neil Sharrod is a coach up in Halifax. And we had a quick conversation about, you know, what on earth are we going to do going forward. And we're not thinking, we are going to launch a rugby league team, so the lads have got something to do.
Old Brodleyans.
Thank you. Right.
But he did grow up in Halifax. Born in Halifax, was Hodgson.
I think Old Brodleyans is where Neil is.
It might be, because there's Halifax RFU.
Right, well, just bear with me, right?
Okay.
In a Manchester, the Ring Road, about 600,000 people.
The Inner Ring Road, isn't that?
Not the Inner Ring Road, sorry, inside the M60.
M60. It's more than 600,000 in that, isn't it?
Okay, right, maybe.
Anyway, go on.
Let's just say there was...
I had it as Manchester City Centre was that kind of number.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So maybe, okay, so inside the M60, how many clubs can... rugby clubs are there?
Broughton Park.
Yep.
De La Salle.
De La Salle,
inside the M60.
Inside the M60.
Yeah.
Heatonmoor,
yeah.
Burnage,
yeah.
Bernage. Yeah.
North Manchester?
Yeah, but is it Broughton? Not Broughton.
Oh, yeah, Broughton. So,
Cedric Park, the place
Trafford
is within.
They're
Park,
outside.
I know, Trafford Metrovic's outside.
Outside.
Yeah, outside.
Burnage are outside.
Yeah.
Or Burnage inside.
Is this Burnage related to Halifax, or have I just missed what you were saying?
No, it is, right? So I got to about seven clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
Halifax has six rugby union clubs.
Does it?
It's got a population of 80,000.
What?
Wow.
And 12 rugby league clubs.
Wow.
What? That is rugby territory, if ever I've
heard
it.
That's proper rugby territory.
Isn't it? Oh, Old Winions too.
Wow.
So, you know, per head of population, you're looking at, like, what?
I'm just thinking, where's Old Winions? I've not been there for years.
Winnies is Horsham.
Is it not just outside?
Is Duckingfield inside?
No, Duckingfield's outside, definitely.
Duckingfield's outside, Ashton's outside, Oldham's outside.
Yeah,
but inside.
Outside. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
Manchester's outside.
Even Manchester.
Well, Manchester's in Stockport.
It's in Cheadle, yeah.
In fact, Manchester might just about now be the best team in Stockport. They were, prior to that, the second best team in Stockport. After Stockport. So,
wow.
Yeah, so Halifax. I mean, God knows what's going on in Huddersfield, because they're, of course, another big rugby town.
That means, officially, Broughton Park under-15s are the best team in Manchester.
Fact. Yeah.
Fact.
So, yeah, I've found out loads of weird little things like that.
That's cool.
This week.
Last thing, unless there's anything else.
Yeah, go on.
If you were to put a percentage, I've re-listened to the Philip Tetlock Super Forecasting Econ Talk
yes.
this week. I'm going back listening to past episodes because some of the new stuff is
rubbish.
Yeah. There's some really good. I listened to
The Value of Laughing. No thanks.
Philip Tetlock. I listened to David Epstein on the Sports Gene.
Yep.
I listened to
Jeffrey Epstein as well.
Not much on Jeffrey Epstein. I listened to Angus Deaton on not on Nudge, on discrepancies between countries' incomes. It was really interesting.
Didn't they have
Diane Coyle on GDP?
Didn't Tetlock speak on Talking Politics as well?
He probably has done. Yeah. But anyway, so Philip Tetlock, if you were to say, give me a percentage likelihood for the initial draft, even though there was no law actually drafted, but they were kind of hips and below as it was originally intended to come in, what percentage would you give me that law gets enacted for level 3 and below?
5%. It's way too toxic. It's dead in the water. It was dead on arrival. Not a chance.
I don't know. The reason I don't know is because World Rugby seems to have rode back on it big time. So did you see Charlie Morgan? Was it Charlie Morgan? I think it's Charlie Morgan. That said, had the graphic of the current tackle, the pros tackle, and then the new amateur tackle, and you could sort of draw a diagonal line across it. They've rode back from that. Alan Gilpin said it's going to happen. No, he says it's not going to happen.
Well, he says there's no concrete plans for it to happen. Mm. Hasn't said it isn't going to happen.
As it happened, waist and below, or like, you know, hip level tackling below, I think has currently got a 0% chance of happening.
So you're even more negative than me. I'd say somewhere between 10 and 20, but yeah, I think that's a good thing. I think
yeah, it is. A good
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it is.
That's a good thing. But you know, there is still challenges,
and there's already a lot of damage done by doing it.
Did we mention Napoleon Dynamite last week for some reason?
You two did, yes.
Why did we mention Napoleon Dynamite? Rob
Quando.
Yeah, right.
It.
Yeah, right. So we had another Rob
Rex Quando.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Right. Grab my arm. No, the other arm. The other way. Right. So this is exactly what happened in this joke of an RFU tackle seminar. Have you watched the video? You have?
Yeah. I didn't get past about a
Jesus.
Minute.
I gave up on
Christ.
It. Christ. Too hard going.
There is a guy, I think he's a local guy actually, and he's an RFU bod. He's trying to demonstrate to a room full of coaches, I think in the women's game, how this tackle law is going to be implemented. And it is absolutely humiliating, the whole thing. So it starts with, you know, head in the same airspace, and then you got to go to the safe zone. And they're advocating moving your body so the player almost comes past you and you don't make an upfront collision tackle, but like a side-on tackle. Mm-hmm. And then the Rob Quando bit comes in, which is, okay, carry the ball. No lower, no higher. So they're now trying to dictate, like, how should these players carry the ball into contact?
My goodness.
When you add it all together, I mean, the tackle height, I think someone could play that. I wouldn't, but someone could play that at the waist height, maybe. The ball carrying part absolutely
to be encouraged to go upright.
Insane.
It happened in our game today, and opening minute of this Lancashire Cup quarter final, opening minute, our tight head prop takes a run up at their fly half and just does the classic forearm forward bounce.
Yeah, have some.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is. Yeah, it very much is. So, I was watching this and I thought, imagine trying to coach this to the boys.
Yeah, no. So it's we're all agreed it's not going to happen. We said it last week. Do you know what's interesting? And Eddie Stevens, I'm going to mention him again. Go and listen to his podcast, Rugby Ranter Banter. He's the only rugby podcast where it's just one person and it's him just chatting in his shed, and he makes me laugh every week. I really like it. Hopefully the Mall Over boys will do a podcast as well and actually get off their backside and join in. Yeah. Eddie Stevens charted and he's absolutely right on this. He said it's been quite enjoyable to watch. The people that came out very early and very punchy in favour of this are all the exact type of people you're thinking they are.
Yeah.
All the ones that get on the quote-unquote progressive crusades come out very vocal, very punchy. I don't need to name names. You'll know who they are. And when you actually look at their Twitter accounts, they've all deleted their tweets.
They
not all, but many of them have deleted their tweets.
Well, Interesting.
So they are reversing at a rate of knots. They're trying to pretend that they never agreed with it.
Well, interestingly, they've had a bit of a godsend this week from the WRU. So they've managed to get their teeth into the WRU.
Oh, yeah, they've got into that, haven't they?
HR meltdown over there. And I mean, is it a good thing or a bad thing?
No, I'm not bothered about that stuff.
No, I couldn't give a shit about it. I could not care less.
I don't want to talk about it.
No. Yeah. I want to talk about it from this angle.
Yeah.
Which is, how do the WRU, now they're in at a turmoil, announce to their members, oh, do you know all that stuff we've been doing, which is really, really bad, and we had to resign over? Well, now we're going to introduce you to blow the waist tackling. Like, we're actually really lucky that the RFU are so incompetent that they decided to do this on their own, get out in front of the pack, want to look like the proactive union, because I think we will defeat them before this contagion spreads. But imagine the WRU having to go back to their clubs now and saying, yeah, after our horrendous week, guess what we're going to do, boys and girls?
Yeah.
Not happening.
No chance.
And on that front, Alan B has emailed contacthedchasers@gmail.com. He said, has this whole new tackle law saga revealed that the RFU is too corporate? Having seen and heard various statements from spokesmen over the last week, I can't help but notice how awfully corporate they are. Almost all people who run the RFU have business backgrounds, not rugby backgrounds. Mm. They can only analyse rugby through a business lens. They constantly harp on about growth because this is what their corporate minds have been trained to achieve. In most companies, the main objective is to grow your business and increase profits. So when they transfer over to the RFU, this is how they continue to think.
Yeah, he's right.
However, I would argue rugby should not be viewed in this way. There is no inherent reason to grow the game. There are no profits to be earned, no shareholders to pay dividends to. The players own the game, not the RFU. Their sole job is to be custodians of the sport, and that is it.
Yeah.
I also believe their entire... And he goes on, but it's just... he says at the end, slightly worried I'm agreeing with JB on far too much lately. In this instance, I think he grasped the matter far better than any of the people who sat in that boardroom and voted on the tackle law a week ago. Frankly, I found them to be incredibly patronising. You do not govern what is safe for me, and no, I'm not an uneducated provincial who does not understand risk.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough with the rant. Once again, great pod. Nice one, Alan.
What I'd say to Adam?
Alan.
Alan, is you all end up thinking like me eventually. You're not the first, you won't be the last. What was I say about the corporate stuff? Yeah, this reminds me a little bit like... Do people predict the end of the world because of artificial intelligence, but something completely benign? So we invent a robot, and the robot's job is to make as many paperclips as possible.
Yeah.
And then we end up just losing the world to paperclips.
Because every single atom in the entire universe gets converted into it's a paperclip maximising device.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar to the RFU. You bring these business pods in, and their only goal is growth. That's what they'll pursue at the at the cost of everything, including our sport. If they could make amateur rugby into golf and get five million more members tomorrow, they would make it into golf. Make no mistake about it. They are not here for the rugby. Mm. And the weird thing is...
Well, that's why they've been hired, and those are the metrics that they're being measured on, that their bonuses are getting. So that they're only doing what they've been hired to do.
There's a difference, isn't there, between being entrepreneurial and corporate. So Dana White is a good example of being entrepreneurial. Incredible businessman.
Darts
is a great one, right? Mm. If you understand your product and how to promote it, you can be entrepreneurial and good at business. Just because you're corporate doesn't mean you're good at business. And this is the mistake that they've made with the RFU. They're getting corporate people in who are utterly incompetent. Like, there's no other word for it. They don't understand their core product. Like, if you talk to people at the RFU, there are some people that understand the nuts and bolts of rugby. But nobody who works in the media side does, really. No one who works... I mean, Bill Sweeney certainly doesn't understand the nuts and bolts of rugby, what it is to be in a club. I mean, he wears our game quite nicely as a skin suit, but he doesn't really understand it. So, no, I agree with that completely. I just say, we do want business minds in the sport. We want brilliant business minds in the sport, but only those that can relate to rugby. Not corporate... corporate people who are just barely passable, because that's what we've got.
It's a little bit like if you were coaching a rugby player, would you look at their skill set and try and amplify what's great about it, or take the thing that they're worst at and pour all your energy into improving that? There is a balance to be made. Mm. There's definitely a bit of both, but I it's important to recognise what's great about something. And it's why people were frustrated about players like Christian Wade never got a shot, because it was like he was always not picked for the little things that he couldn't do, rather than being selected for the incredible things that he could do.
Well, I mean, Zach Mercer.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the modern day. Well, Christian Wade's the modern day.
So chunking this up to the governance of the game, it's actually exactly as one of our emailers said earlier, is who's beating the drum for the things that rugby's incredible for?
Not the RFU. Not the RFU, because they don't understand. I think it's taken me a little while to... See, I never really cared about the council. I never really cared about the RFU much, because I showed up on a Saturday and rugby just ran. And as long as the thing runs, you can have your £30,000 a year expenses, and you can act like a bit of a div sometimes around the national anthem. Don't really care. You know, do what you want. Specifically council. I mean, everyone was up in arms about their expenses. I kind of think, well, look, if you've dedicated 20 years to the amateur game and you found yourself on committee after committee after committee, and you do the hard work, maybe it's okay if you have...
You see, Phil, JB's got to think, what if I'm a councillor in a few years? I need to have a consistent point.
Five-star trips.
Yeah.
If I end up on the council, right, I'll be the first one to say, I won't be mealy-mouthed about it. I'll tell you straight up, I deserved it. Right? I deserve the things which I get. So,
trip to Rome.
Yeah. But then, so long as I'm not then going to appropriate that and then just trash the entire sport, they can have their expenses, just don't trash the sport. Mm. So, you know, I never really bothered. But now, we are paying attention, and it's not good. They could have kept all of their great, high-powered, high-paying jobs with loads of expenditure, and they just needed to be quiet. I don't know why they didn't just shut up.
So I suspect, and I don't think it's too much of a leap to suggest, that Bill Sweeney will... he might not go voluntarily, but he will not be chief exec of the RFU for much longer. And probably there'll be some changes in their comms team.
I would imagine both those things have to be nailed on.
Yeah.
They have to be. I mean, that is a minimum that I'd accept right now, is Bill Sweeney has to go.
And depending on how your RFU councillor has dealt with it, some have been more sympathetic, some have been more definitive and stubborn, I'd say, that no, they absolutely made the right call, and you just need to understand those ones are risking a further backlash.
So. Yeah, they should go, and I think they will in good time.
Mm. Well, we'll see, but that's where we are. I don't know about you, but I'm just exhausted.
Yeah, I am as well.
I am. It's only been what, a week and a half, 10 days.
Yeah.
I don't want to discuss any more on the...
Yeah.
And I keep thinking of other angles and other things to say, and I think, if I just start on this now, it's another 10 minutes of talking about this again, and again, and again, and again. And people keep asking me, like, what do you think? It's rude, but I just forward them my article. So I know how... I have these conversations with some journalists sometimes, saying, what do you think of this? And they just forward me the article which I've written.
Mm.
And I understand why now, because it just gets so tiresome explaining the same stuff over and over and over again.
Can we just all agree that, well, not all agree, we need to be vigilant. You're going to that meeting on February the 8th and stuff.
Yeah, but I'm taking a huge, how do I explain it? It's like a huge model of a man which I'm making out of straw. Don't know what we'll do with it yet.
I can't go. I'm going to Geneva on that day, so I can't go.
All right, humble brag.
No, I'm basically all I'm doing.
Are you taking the spirit of Cocker?
No, I'm just Kate's working out there, so I'm just tagging along and like just.
Go see the bankers.
You're going to Geneva. I'll come and just stay in your hotel room. Fine.
You got an appointment booked with your banker.
I might go skiing for a couple of days. That's what I might do.
Yeah, it's a bit too cold. Last time I was in Geneva, I had a little swim in Lake Geneva.
Did you?
I did.
Did you?
But that was like mid June. And it was about 30 degrees. I would not go at this time. Oh, okay, I wouldn't swim at this time of year.
So I can't go to that meeting at Liverpool St Helens, but that is going to be a punchy place. I guarantee.
Get there early. The car park will be full.
It will be rammed. And I reckon you will come away so frustrated, because it will just be lots of people getting into lots of minutiae. What about when I'm coaching my third team and they want to do pick and go from a mall? What do I do? It'll get into that sort of minutiae, and you'll come away feeling very frustrated.
Yeah, it's going to be... We're going to talk hours and hours, aren't we, about things which aren't important.
Yeah.
Mm.
When the principle at play is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, can we all agree that, or hopefully get to a point in our mind, this isn't going to happen. It might be nipple height at worst, and
Nibblehead is still bad though. We still say no to
it. Yeah, okay, we can still say no to that if you wish. That's absolutely fine. But that'll be the worst it gets to. There may be some good things that come out of this in terms of how the structures work, and can we just get it off the agenda by the time the Six Nations comes around so we can actually enjoy the rugby.
We've got
itself.
1 week.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, we'll talk about some actual rugby on the other podcast. So,
yes.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.